Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy.
Welcome to Sci-Fi and Squeam on Joy 94.9. This evening we will be talking to David King, the director, producer and it seems overall creator of a science fiction film that's playing at the Muff Festival this month. David King is a man of many trades and he's been happy to talk to us this evening on Sci-Fi and Squeam. Welcome to the show, David.
Thanks very much, Sonja.
That's great to have you on. Thank you very much. Now, David, can you tell us briefly about the story of Purge? Without giving too much away, so our listeners will go along and see it, what can you tell us about the plot of the movie?
Yes, I could, certainly. In the first place, I have to say, it's not exactly a sci-fi movie. It's more of a quasi sci-fi movie.
Okay.
By which I mean that it's sort of set in a parallel universe. Everything in this universe looks the same as it does in ours, but things are different in a very essential way. That's basically that all people are created by a genetic engineering company programmed for their roles in life. And if you fail to assume the roles you've been created for, you become what is called a stray and treated worse than a criminal. Now, the story basically can follow the trials and tribulations of a young lady called Lala Thomas, who's been programmed to be a bondage, discipline, sadomasochism, mistress, slave. So on her first day of work at her sister's upmarket salon, she suddenly discovers she's unable to assume her role. She becomes ill when exposed to the work, so she's forced to flee and join an underground, illegal underground organisation to survive. All she really wants is to go back to her rightful role in society, but because she's been addicted to a illegal drug, and the only people who have this drug are the strays, she can't get back to it. And so the story basically follows that. But it's a very fragmented story. It's I had no intention of making a mainstream, commercial or conventional film. What I wanted to do was to explore the art of storytelling, try to create a kind of a science fiction mode of storytelling where the actual story is told in a very fragmented and disjointed sort of a manner, intercut with things like news clips, mock commercials and things like that, which basically give an overall impression of what the society is like.
Yeah, no, I did enjoy the mixed media or multi sort of, you know, the different shots overlapping, which sort of added to the story, sort of like a story behind the story of Layla. I mean, Layla's going through addiction and this ordeal, and yet behind it we can see that it's, you know, a regime that seems to be running everything and people aren't allowed to be emotionally involved with anything, and yeah, it's quite shocking on that sort of level. But I mean, I enjoyed it. I think it does have a lot of content and going on in such a way. So you've said that your storytelling style is fragmented and that is a deliberate thing. Do you think that's a good way of getting a story across? Is that why you used all those different media?
No, I don't know, actually. I mean, it was an experiment. And you see, I belong to the Melbourne Filmmakers Co-op back in the 1970s. Back in those days, there was a great deal of experimentation going on right across all forms of art and media. And it seems to me today that cinema has become very much the same.
Yes.
You know, all of the science fiction films you could go to see today pretty much tell the story the same sort of way. There's a conventional mainstream way of telling a story, and that's what everything does. Now, I wanted to try to get away from this, to get back more to the feeling of experimentation of anything could have was possible that we had back in the 1970s and the early 1980s. And that was one of the driving forces that motivated me to create the film like this, primarily because I felt that film today is becoming boring. As a matter of fact, Peter Greenaway, the British film director and artist, has said that we haven't had any real cinema as art since about 1982, and I would have to agree with him.
I wonder if he's talking about his own films. maybe?
Well, I don't know about all films. I mean, films, yes.
Who would be an inspiration to you? When I look at the film, I myself see people like early George Lucas's THX 1138.
Yes, you're right.
Those sort of influences. Are there others?
About Lucas' age, Jean-Luc Godard's Alphaville, for example.
Oh, yes, of course.
Yes, which one of the things I particularly liked about that film, Jean-Luc Godard's Alphaville, was the way that it was sort of like supposed to be set on this distant planet in a distant galaxy and cut to Palestine in 63. And though it seemed to disguise the fact that it was Palestine in 63, driving 1963 cars and so forth. Matter of fact, one of the things that interests me is creating a kind of science fiction where the more things change, the more they stay the same.
Exactly. I think that's a good point, actually. Now, as far as the storyline goes, it also reminded me of Brave New World. Stories like that, which have been around for a long time, but have that same sort of thread and idea, a regime of authoritarian control.
Mm. I think that basically whether you're right-wing or left-wing, once you start having ideology like free market ideology or any other sort of ideology, you get to a situation where people got more and more control. Also, there's another thing going on here, that with free market policies that we've had since the last maybe couple of decades or so, we've seen that people have less and less time for family, less and less time to...
It's harder to have a relationship these days, getting the time and putting that aside, you know, when you're working all the time and these big companies and corporations. Yeah, I think that's
right,
a really good point.
Yeah. And you can see a time when people just don't have the time to have children anymore. They don't have the time, or if they do have children, they don't have the time to raise them anymore. Because basically this is what's even happening now. I'm living in Port Arlington and I'm seeing all of these people here in Port Arlington, families who don't have time to spend with their kids because they've got to work, just to try to pay the mortgage, keep food on the table, all that sort of thing.
The
more that happens, the more you can imagine a time in the government might say, look, don't worry about having kids. We'll look after all that for you, okay? We'll take care of the whole thing. Population will be fixed up. You don't have to worry about a thing anymore.
That's
and once
true.
They can do that, then they can start controlling people's minds. So that's where part of the whole idea came from.
Okay. You certainly appear on the credits, like I was saying before, in the areas of writer, producer, production design, even music. You're just so multi-skilled. It's amazing. How long has it taken for you to get to this level?
If you're talking about how long it took me to learn to do all those things, I started making films in 1974 when I was a student at the Gordon Institute of Technology's Humanities class making films in 16mm and they were absolutely woeful. And then I hadn't been right through a whole career of being a scriptwriter for radio and television, running my own media business, things like that, making commercials and community service announcements and corporate videos, all that type of thing, just to learn the basic craft, the craft skills that I would need to do this sort of thing. Then I went back to making short films, worked with some very, very good cinematographers and people like that, and I learned from working with them. And so everything I do, I pick up more knowledge, more skill and knowledge all the time. But really, on Purge, it was the first time I challenged myself since maybe 1975 to do all those sort of jobs.
Is it the first full length feature you've done since then?
Yes, it is.
Okay, that's amazing. When I was looking at it, it did actually remind me of the way graphic novels work, when you've got the interspersing of the different graphics and things.
That in mind,
one
of the things that I've been partly influenced by was Japanese anime cinema.
Yeah, okay. We're actually doing an episode next week on the anime festival that's coming up in Melbourne. So that's interesting.
Right.
So you've got a fondness for manga and Japanese illustrations?
A fondness for it, yes.
Yeah.
I watched the Neo Genesis Evangelion series on television.
Okay.
When I was up in Brisbane, and I was just blown away by the visual, by the look of it, the way they, the animation, the lighting, the camera angles, the way it was done, all that sort of thing. It was just amazing. And I thought, well, I would love to do something like that with live action film.
That's excellent. It's actually playing, Evangelion 2.0 is playing at the Anime Festival in, September, I believe. So, yeah, hopefully people will recognise that similarity. I certainly did. Now, can you tell us a bit about the versatile cast you've got? Are they all actors in that cast?
The cast, well, Sarah Brain, interestingly enough, it was her very first film role. She'd never played in a film before she played in Purge. Now, while we made Purge, Purge was shot over 2 years, she went on to act in several short films, and I think one feature film, I'm not sure whether that was actually made or not. She was very excited to get that role because it was the first real film role, an emotionally demanding role she'd ever landed. The others, Damon Hunter, for example, who plays Sergeant Detective Jack, he was much, much more experienced, been in commercials, television series like Blue Heels and things like that. Same as Randall Berger, who was in Neighbours, I think, Home and Away or something like that. And then we had Frances Marrington, who was primarily a theatre actress. And that's obvious in her performance, but I actually liked that because basically it was like she was encountering emotions that she didn't know how to deal with, and so because she didn't know how to deal with them, she was coming across like she was acting to the bleachers 50 yards down track. And then you've had Meta Royal, of course, who she was also fairly experienced. She played in Hating Alice Lashley, that feature film, and I think a couple of television series. I'm not exactly sure what the rest of her CV was, but most of these people came through a casting call where they found out about the film from other actors and they contacted me and expressed interest. Casting probably took about 6 months before we actually were ready to shoot the film. We were having casting sessions all the time, sometimes a complete waste of time, and we couldn't find anybody suitable. Yeah. And sometimes we were in luck.
Now, as a gay radio station here at Joy 94.9, our listeners will be interested in the what we would call intersex character as one of the main characters in the film. Why did you think you would include, you know, diverse sexualities and practices like BDSM in your film? Was there a reason behind that?
Yes, I think that once you take love out of the equation, there's no more love between people. And there's no more real emotion between people. People are bred to do their job, make money, and to consume, and nothing else. Mm. Once you take love out of the equation, you find that sexuality becomes warped, and the upper echelons of society control everything, then only the people at the very top can afford to view the services of a live sex worker. Mm. And basically, even today, you will find a large number of people at the top of the corporate chain are quite into things like bondage and discipline. It seems to be something that goes with power. Yes. So when people have power, they are used to dominating other people, and so somehow they get to the position where they want to be dominated. When they're not actually working. And this is fairly common. I'm not saying that everybody in the corporate sector and in government and so forth is into BDSM. No, I'm not saying that at all, but I'm saying it is, in fact, a fairly common thing to find in some of these people's lives. And so basically that's where it came from.
And did you have people who work in that area actually advise during the film?
Yes, we had one, Mistress Tan, mm-hmm. who is not really a heavy BDSM person, and she gave us advice, for example, when the scene where Layla's sitting astride the guy, ripping candle wax on him, we didn't know how this would actually be done. So I had to ask her, how do you do this sort of thing? And she said, well, you have to hold the candle a certain height above the person, otherwise the candle wax will burn them.
Yes, nasty.
And you don't want to burn them. So things like that, technical advice like that was very important to us.
And it's all filmed around Melbourne, was that correct?
Yes, North Melbourne. As a matter of fact, I have to thank Lindsay Saddington of Australian Centre of Performing Arts, because basically he gave us his entire four-storey building in which to shoot most of the film. Okay. And so if the film looks like it's got many different locations, that's some credit to the fact that this building can be made to look so differently on so many different levels, because most of it was shot in this one building.
It does. It looks like you've had, you know, been locating all over Melbourne, but there's a lot of interior scenes. Yeah, no, it's quite amazing what you've done. What was the budget like?
I haven't sat down and worked it out to the final decimal point, but somewhere around $33,000.
Wow, and it's just amazing what you can do with the efforts you've done, but it's taken 2 years to complete.
It took 2 years to shoot, but we were shooting mostly weekends and weeknight evenings, and we Verne shooting every week. Sometimes we don't get one shot in a month. A lot of people tell me, well, this is going to be absolutely impossible. How are you going to keep the cast and crew together? Well, as a matter of fact, we didn't keep the cast and crew together. We only had a very small number of people, about three or four people who were together all the time. And that's why we had so many different makeup artists, for example. We had about 15 different makeup artists because we couldn't keep the same makeup artists on the crew all the time.
And now, where to next for the film Purge after Muff this month? Will you be shown it at other festivals around the country, or will it go overseas?
Yeah, it's going to the BUT Film Festival in Breda in the Netherlands.
Oh,
and
great.
That's the next one coming up in September. Mm. I'm not exactly sure of the date, though. I've just been in touch with them and sent the material over to them yesterday, as a matter of fact.
Excellent. That's exciting. Will you be going with the film?
Oh, I don't think so, unless somebody helps out with the airfare.
Yeah, right.
It's not exactly cheap to go over to Europe.
That's true. Not these days. Now, finally, what next for you, David? Do you have any projects that you could talk about now, coming up?
Well, I could, but I'd rather keep it close to my chest for the
yes,
moment, because
it's still
right. Thunder. There are two projects, and one of them is overseas with the Dutch film critic, Ton van Roy, who liked Purge and gave me a lot of help in getting the distribution contract for it. And there's another project, which is very, very avant-garde, very abstract, which I'm working on, because I'm sort of inclined to go in that direction more than conventional storytelling. But beyond that, I can't really divulge much more at the moment.
That's great. Thank you anyway. Now, where can our listeners go online to find out more about Purge and about yourself?
Okay. Well, people can go to www.purgefilm.com.au, and that's the website for Purge.
Okay, and Purge is playing Thursday the 26th of August at the Muff Film Festival.
That's right, scheduled for at 7 p.m.
Docklands. That'll be great. Okay, look, thanks so much, David.
No.
Thank you very much for coming on to Sci-Fi and Squeam this evening. And that's David King, the creator of the film Purge, which will be shown at Muff this month.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.